Skull and Everett present This Week in Horror.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Everett.
And I'm Sickle, and we're Sickle and Everett. We're the Unhallowed Reviewers. I actually don't have my notes up, Everett, so
what
I think you're going to have to lead the way.
I know. What a hella slacker. Well,
I realized that as soon as we started the podcast.
Because the first thing we're going to talk about was going to be your interpretation or feelings on Denver Pop Culture Con.
That's how we're going to kick it off, huh? So,
yep.
That is, as I think is the case with any Comic-Con. Yeah, I said it. Go ahead and sue us, San Diego.
Don't ask
see what
for
you
that.
Got.
Don't ask for that.
Oh, okay. As with any convention, like DPCC, it's hit or miss when it comes to horror-specific material.
Lots of good cosplay, potentially, for horror, but not good content, I guess, right?
What's that?
I'm sorry?
What's that?
Lots of good cosplay.
Oh, yes. There was this person. I actually didn't see them this year, but there for a couple, probably three or four years prior to this year, there was somebody that was dressed up as the clown from American Horror Story, and they would just stand in the middle of the room just staring off into space. It was legit.
Now I don't think of clowns. I think of, like, Puddles, Pity Party, or whatever, or just the singing clown. He does. He's like a really good singer. And that's all I can think of. No scary clowns anymore.
It was. Who else do you see all the? Oh, Pyramid Head. There's a Pyramid Head.
Oh yeah, there's
that
like
comes
a,
every year.
Yep, that guy. I remember that.
Yeah. So there's some pretty good. I saw a pretty awesome. This is sort of horror. Predator Sith. Merge. That I actually posted on our DPCC review for on our website. So it was pretty cool. That one was pretty cool. It's kind of blurry. I'm not a good photographer.
That's okay. Neither am I.
But anyways, back to, like, you know, it's hit or miss. It's a gamble on whether or not you're going to get anything. Sometimes you get kind of pleasant surprises when you're sitting in on panels and you're like, oh, that's right. This guy was in that awesome horror movie. And mm-hmm. That did happen this year. They show up, and they're not there specifically to talk about horror movies or anything like that. But there's always a horror fan in the audience that asks a question. That's like, hey, I know that everybody loved you in Frozen, but what about that guy you decapitated in that movie 7 years ago?
Are you talking about Zachary Levi specifically?
No. I am actually referring to Cary Elwes.
Oh, okay.
Who is known more for his, like, comedic roles. Most notably is the pirate... what's
Dread
the
Captain
pirate's
Roberts.
Name? Yes, Dread Captain Roberts from The Princess Bride. What's his other name? I forgot his other name. Wesley. He's known for kind of characters like that. So it was kind of a big surprise when the movie came out initially that Cary Elwes was in a horror movie, and that was Saw. Like, he was in the original Saw, and I think that people kind of forget that because he's just a one-off character in that in what ended up being, like, a very, very large franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of forget about him. But the original... I totally agree with a lot of people as far as, like, all the sequels have just become, like, mindless torture porn.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one, I think, is still a legitimate piece of horror history. It gave us James Wan, love it or hate it, it did influence a lot of the horror that we've gotten since it came out.
How you hate the first one.
No, I just mean, like, what it did. That it kind of kickstarted the torture porn genre. I know a lot of people hold that against the first movie, but it's not really the first movie's fault, because it's not really that. It's just that after that movie came out, people were... The studios were like, the everybody wants more of this. Let's give them more of just the sawing a guy's leg off. It, you know, just bump it up to 100. Just, you know, like Jaws and Alien. From, like, Alien to Aliens, it was like, well, everybody loved one alien. What if we give them 150 aliens? And that actually turned out really well, so I don't want to bash on aliens or anything. But it's something that studios have done for a long time, and that's the part that kind of sucks. But the first one is, in my opinion, a classic. It's a staple.
I still like the second Predator, too, and the second RoboCop's better, and... I don't know.
Yeah, I shouldn't have brought that up. That's a poor example. But it's just... I think you could say it was like an abuse of that trend.
Oh, yeah. I think in Saw... Saw's its own kind of thing, because the first Saw movie and Hostel started something that didn't need to be created. And I'll agree with that. Anyway, you're talking about DCC and how sometimes it's random if you get good stuff or not. And I thought that would be a good segue to, you know, the fact that there is now a Magic 8-Ball movie that has been announced from Mattel and Blumhouse Productions. Mattel released a quote that says, "Since the 1950s, Magic 8-Ball has inspired imagination, suspense, intrigue across generations. The iconic toy has a built-in connection with fans and untapped potential for storytelling. There are no partners better suited to tell the Magic 8-Ball story in collaboration with Mattel films than Jeff Wadlow and Blumhouse Productions, whose unique approach to the thriller genre has captivated audiences worldwide and gained widespread accolades." I just didn't really realize that there was a Magic 8-Ball story.
Is that what that meant?
I don't think that it's going to be like a biopic, but I just thought it was funny. So this guy's all over the place. He's done Truth or Dare, not the crappy one. He was doing some...
Well, the less crappy one.
Yeah, Bates Motel. Sorry, yeah, that's right. He did Ryan Henson Solves Crime on Television. He did Kick-Ass. He worked on as a writer on Kick-Ass 2. So I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what I'm saying. I don't want to see this movie.
I feel like the only way that could be even remotely entertaining is if it's a horror comedy that's completely self-aware. If they try to make it serious, it just sounds like it's going to end up being more of a joke than if they just made it a joke to begin with.
Right, and like the only movie that I've ever seen do an 8-Ball good was Shazam, and they didn't even really do an 8-Ball that well in that one. It was just like an 8-Ball that transported some character to another area. Because it wasn't even the 8-Ball that was doing it, it was just, there's an 8-Ball there. And that's the best supporting role for the Grammys goes to the 8-Ball and Shazam.
Yeah, it's never been used for anything in its, you know, 80-year existence, whatever, I can't do math, 70-year existence.
Sure.
But just be, like, the butt of a joke in some sitcom.
Right.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Rom-com. It's just, like, that's just, it's not, it doesn't carry the same mystique as the Ouija board.
I was going to say, yeah, which, the Ouija board is, like, mysterious and, yeah.
Yeah, there are people out there, which, Ifrit, I believe you're one of them that doesn't, even as a demon, you don't want to mess with, like, those. You don't really like messing with those things.
No, I never like to come up to Earth when someone's trying to summon me with a Ouija board. It's just not my jam.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's plenty of other people, or demons, I guess, I shouldn't say people, that love doing that, and it's just not something I'm about. And I don't know why these kids feel like it's necessary to summon demons. I mean... maybe they're just trying to contact their dead relatives, but they're never going to be just a dead relative.
No, it's really more of like they're calling like an operator, and they don't realize that they're just calling an operator, and that operator is drunk and high on like sulfur fumes,
mm-hmm.
and so they're going to connect them with whoever they feel like, and not the dead relative they're looking for.
Yeah, well, so Magic 8-Ball movie is probably no go for Ifrit.
It's no go for me either. Unless the trailer comes out and, like, it's like a killer, literally like a killer 8-Ball that, like, somehow kills people.
Like wheel or tire or whatever.
Oh my gosh, rubber.
Rubber. Yeah, thank you.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Have you watched that movie?
Yeah.
It's insane. The way it's filmed is insane. It makes you feel like you're going crazy.
Yeah,
it's also pretty funny.
And it is pretty funny. I mean, I'd watch a Rubber movie over a Magic 8-Ball movie any day.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. That director, not to go off on too much of a tangent, I cannot remember what the movie is called, but that director of Rubber did another movie, and it's way less horror-oriented, if any at all, but it's, like, about a guy that, like, loses his dog, but then it's, like, this massive, like, hidden society conspiracy that, like, took his dog and stuff, and it's like, just as insane, but there's actually a little bit more of a story to it. It's not bad. It's not bad.
You don't remember what it's called, though. That's not helpful.
It's, like, Finding Spot or something. I don't remember. I'll look it up while we're talking about other stuff.
Are you sure? I don't see any movies. Oh, wait, no. I don't see any movies about, like, cult that have Spot in the name for that director. Good luck.
Oh, am I just making stuff up?
I don't know. Anyway.
I'm just so drunk.
Let's talk about some movies that we've seen. So, we watched, not movies, but Good Omens was a show that we both just got done watching. It was really good. Really good.
It was just called Wrong, by the way.
Oh, okay.
The movie was called Wrong. And, yeah. Anyways.
Good Omens.
Good Omens is amazing. And I love David Tennant, and I don't give a crap about Doctor Who. There, I said it. But David Tennant is awesome. And Michael Sheen is awesome in everything he's ever done.
What else has he done? I just, like, feel like I recognize him, but I can't even name anything he's been in.
Underworld. Lucius from Underworld. he's also... Or Lucian, sorry. He's also been, like, kind of a side goofy character in a lot of things.
Okay, that's what I feel like I remember him from. It's just like, oh, that looks like the guy in that side thing.
Yeah, and almost every role I've ever seen him in, he's been kind of a funny person.
Yeah.
He's not like the comedic relief. Usually what he's in is a funny thing, but he's usually a good funny piece of it. So it's kind of funny looking back on it now, because my first experience with him was Underworld, and he was super serious in that role. And now you, like, look back on it and you're like, oh, he's not funny in it, or he's not serious in anything else. He's just funny in everything else.
Yeah, I've never seen anything else he's been in. I saw Slaughterhouse Rules. Yeah, that's how I recognized him, was from Slaughterhouse Rules. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, he's in that? Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yes, he's like the dean or something, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you saw that something recently with him in it. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was in the Twilight movies, so there you go.
Fantastic. Great. You know, we probably had some respect building for him with our audience, and now he's... Oh, and he was an Apostle. Which you haven't watched yet.
Oh, I haven't, no. It's like on my list. It's like The Babysitter. It's like on my list of ones to watch. But Good Omens is really good, and if you haven't seen it yet, you should watch it. I don't want to spoil too much, because I think it's a really cool story. And I really like the way it was written, and the things that happened, and how it ended up.
I think I can give a very good way of describing it without giving anything away. It's like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy meets Preacher.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I nailed it.
Nailed it. All right, so let's talk about another movie that we've both seen, Gojira.
Ah, yes. So I feel like we should give a little bit of backstory to both of our approaches to this movie.
Why? I mean, we talked about it on podcast before. Haven't we?
What did we talk about?
How, like, I didn't want to see it.
Well, let's refresh everyone's memory.
Are you just going to hold it above me? Is all you're going to do? You're gonna be like, oh, I told him it was going to be good, and then he saw a trailer, and it's made up, and now it's good, and he's going to take all the credit for it.
No, okay, there you go. You did it for me. Okay, we're good.
So, okay, fine, I'll do it for real. Sickle was excited for this movie from the beginning. I was less impressed because the first Godzilla was underwhelming. And I actually think I like Kong Skull Island more than I like the first Godzilla. But I digress. I was middle of the road for this movie. I didn't really want to pay to see it in theaters. I was just not excited. I wasn't going to hate on it, but I just one of those movies I was probably going to let pass by.
Yeah, you were just apathetic. Yeah. You didn't have any hatred towards it or anything.
Yeah. And what happened was they put out the trailer with what song was it? It's like Somewhere Over the Rainbow, I think.
Yeah.
And the way that they made the trailer with the monster fighting, I don't know. Sometimes a trailer gets me, and sometimes it makes me feel like so interested in a movie that I don't even care if the movie's good, the trailer was good, you know? And that is one of those trailers, and it was actually a really good movie.
It is. I thought it was so much fun. I'm not going to build it up like it has a ton of substance to it, but I'll admit myself, I'll be a hypocrite here. I usually judge a movie pretty harshly if it's doing mindless pandering to the audience, like to fans of the craft.
Mm-hmm.
And it did quite a bit of that, or what could be perceived as pandering, but I just loved it. Because I don't think that it didn't feel like it was just shoved in your face. It was very, like, most of the time it was subtle, or it was just like, hey guys, like, let's be honest here. You came here for the monster fights, so let's see some monsters fight. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that most of the comics and GIFs and things I've seen is basically just around the fact they're like, was it a good Godzilla movie? And you're like, yeah, monsters fought. Why are you asking this? Like, yeah. I mean, and it doesn't focus on the human drama too much. I mean, the humans are there to kind of fill the gaps between the monster fighting. And it doesn't feel like the first one where the human story is the really important part. And they kill off a character they used to sell the movie in the first 5 minutes. Moving on. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, no, wait. I like when they try to, I mean, I feel like the biggest difficulty in movies like this, where you have the human element and you have very powerful beings involved, it's hard to make the humans feel like they matter in the plot at all. I feel like this is a huge problem that is very apparent in almost all, if not all, of the Transformers movies.
Yeah, where right. It's
they're
a good,
trying
a good
to give the humans purpose, and there's no purpose. And in the Godzilla movie, I felt like they did a pretty clever job using the like sonar communication thing to like feed off of the instinctual behaviors of the monsters to like give them just a slight manipulation to help. And like the rest of the time, they're trying to help, but they're not really doing anything. Like, when the jets are shooting missiles and trying to help Godzilla, it doesn't look to... It's not having any effect, but they're trying to help.
It's, like, distracting.
Yeah. And so, like, there's these... just a couple of moments where it's, like, they're helping manipulate the situation using the technology that they have, but it's so minute, like, they can't do anything. Like, there's... It's clear that they... Like, they're kind of just crossing their fingers and hoping Godzilla can save the day.
Yeah, right.
I thought they did a good job.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. So I suggest going to see it, especially in theaters, because this is one of those movies you kind of want to see in the big screen.
Oh, it's so much fun. Yeah. And when I heard people complaining after the movie. They were like, man, it was so loud, I could feel it on me. I was like, yeah.
It's almost like Godzilla, what are you complaining about? Like,
I know, yeah. It was like I was actually like involved and embraced in the movie, engaged in it, and... I don't know. It was a great movie to see in IMAX, and I was very pleasantly satisfied with it. I wouldn't say surprised. That was what I was hoping it would be, and it didn't disappoint.
Yeah, so go see Godzilla.
It's fun.
So let's do like a wait, wait, don't tell me kind of like review of this next movie, because I actually want to see it, and I haven't yet, which is Maw, and not yes. M-A-W, but. M-A.
As badly as I would love that. This one was interesting. So I was able to catch Ma. I actually did a double feature, drove to two different theaters just to make sure that I could get to Godzilla and Ma in one night, because Denver Pop Culture Con was that weekend, and it was my only chance to see both of them on opening weekend. And I was glad that I did that. If I could have figured it out in reverse, it would have probably been nice to finish with Godzilla, because there's a little bit more going on at midnight in Godzilla than there is in Ma. You know, just relatively. I mean, like, and that's not a diss on Ma, that's just saying, like, you know, I mean, giant monsters fighting with them roaring in your face, it's just easier to keep your attention at late at night.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. Anyways, it's... yeah, I won't go into the story too much, other than to say it's kind of, I believe it is a horror movie, but it has quite a bit of like kind of indie, dark indie drama to it, in that it feels like a horror movie with a soul, but it's a very dark soul.
Interesting.
You're seeing a story, like you're watching a story unfold, and by the time things are really going down, there's so much emotional baggage that you have as an audience for the person, for Ma, that you're that like there's some moral dilemma of like, do some of these people deserve what's happening or not?
That's a really good movie to me. Like that's. To me, that's the making of a good movie, where you're, like, kind of sympathetic.
Yes, and it takes you to... It's essentially the opposite extreme of Michael Myers. Michael Myers has no motive.
Well,
and that's what makes him interesting.
I think he does in the Rob Zombie one, but yeah, you're right, in the normal one, yes.
In the normal one, yeah, I'm sorry. And referring to the original, he has no motive, and that's what makes him interesting. Ma is the complete opposite side of the spectrum, where it feels like she has motive for everything she does, and it makes her interesting.
That's
like,
really cool
to see this.
I'll have to go check that
it
out.
It was a good movie. Yeah, it was a good movie. It's got a little bit of a build to it because it's actually developing her story and her character. But it's a good movie. It's very engaging for you at a like emotional and moral level.
Awesome. So we both got to finally catch a trailer for Ad Astra, which is a movie that I think a few weeks ago we were like, this movie is mysterious, there's nothing happening here. And
yeah, it was supposed to come out like 3 times already.
Oh yeah, that too. But nobody could find any trailers or anything, and suffice it to say that none of the stuff we found before was actually related to the movie in any way, as far as I can tell from the trailer.
Yeah.
But there's a trailer to go watch if you want, and it looks pretty cool. It looks a lot like, kind of like a new age version of Alien, if Alien, and not in terms of like there being aliens, but in terms of like the realistic sci-fi aspect, like the whole kind of like low sci-fi or like whatever they call it, where everything is really set in what we know about space right now, but a lot of crazy stuff that we can't do yet is currently happening.
Yeah, it does appear. It gives me a little bit of an Interstellar feel. It just kind of feels like that a little bit to me. It's not the same kind of story. It's definitely more low key, like you said, in the sense that to me it feels like it's not that far in the future. A lot of the technology that you see in the trailer feels like technology you've seen before, of like what we use to go to space right now.
Like moon buggies and so rockets with jettison fuel tanks and spacesuits that are similar to the ones you see in Gravity and all this stuff.
Exactly. So it looks very familiar, which gives it the sense of realism, but the implication in the trailer is that this is slightly in the future where we've essentially done some colonizing of our own solar system. And
I didn't really get that vibe. I thought it was more just like one mission went out there to do something.
Yeah, there was, and maybe the synopsis that I read was old. Maybe that's not in this anymore. But it implied that there were some like outposts that don't really follow normal law anymore, and that he'd probably that Brad Pitt's character would probably be stopping by these places on the way. But essentially, the main plot, like you were alluding to there, was that he's actually trying to chase down his dad, who went on this mission to go find alien technology at the edge of the solar system. But I feel like there's the realism in that we're not seeing anything that, it doesn't imply at least, that we're seeing anything with like light speed, and we're not seeing anything with like interdimensional travel and blah blah blah. It's this is as far as our technology can take us, and so we're going to be, it's going to be kind of like Gravity to a crazy degree.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I'm kind of middling on this movie. Like, I want to see it, but I don't want to see it from, like, a horror perspective. And I think that means I can probably wait to see it. Does that make any sense? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. It does not feel like it has any heavy horror elements. It's probably going to be thriller at most, in its degree of, like, tension and the darkness of it definitely feels lighter. It does feel like it's heavy, but it doesn't.
You're right. That was a good comparison.
Yeah, I think if when you watch the trailer, it feels like that, like that level of atmosphere. And so going into it with that perspective, I am looking forward to it. But yeah, definitely not from a horror perspective.
And I will be pleasantly surprised if there's like a Sunshine or like kind of vague Alien at the End-esque type of thing, you know?
I would love that.
And that would be really cool. But other than that, it just looks like a pretty decent sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I'm all for, because sci-fi is our little happy little step-cousin to horror.
Exactly. It's like dark fantasy or something. Anyway. I don't know if we ever talked about that movie on the podcast, but A Dark Song is really good. So if you've never seen A Dark Song, I don't know why I thought of that when I said dark fantasy, but go see A Dark Song.
Yeah, it's funny you brought that up. I saw a Reddit post that was asking about best slow burn horror movies, and that one was mentioned in there.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
But we also just got a new trailer delivered to us from on high, from Guillermo del Toro, or whatever his name is. I think that's his name.
It's not Benicio del Toro,
so that's all I know.
No, he's not Benicio.
And it's the new, it's a longer, extended, kind of more story-based trailer for Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And I think Sickle and I both agree that like this movie's on like the edge of PG-13, if you will. Like, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I feel like just watching the trailer, I'm like, man, you're showing all this in the trailer, and it feels like it's really going to be pushing the boundaries of what PG-13 can handle, because there are a lot of things where the MPAA will make a movie R just simply based on the level of terror.
Interesting. What's another example?
The Conjuring.
The
Conjuring would be a good example, but it's such a weird gray area. And I feel like, because I would say that Insidious is about as scary as The Conjuring is, but Insidious was PG-13. And The Conjuring is R. And The Conjuring doesn't have, I mean, I've seen it quite a few times, I'm trying to recall it in my head. The first one especially doesn't have that much violence or anything. It's all about the scares.
Yeah.
And like, it could be that the MPAA is manipulated in such a way of like, you know, hey, we're going to slip you some money under the table to make this R so that we can get a good, word of mouth going on this thing.
Yeah.
So there's that manipulation that could be happening for some of those R-rated movies that would compare Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark to. But, I don't know, I think it looks legit. It's probably the most excited I've been for a PG-13 horror movie in a while.
Yeah, me too. I mean, normally I'll like not check out a rating on a movie and then be sad that it's PG-13, kind of like La Llorona. And I was like, oh, okay, so this is just going to be kind of like what it is, right? You know, like what it's supposed to be, which is like the once or twice or three times a year horror movie that comes out that's supposed to make money. It's supposed to be a cash grab. Picking on something that is big that hasn't been touched yet. But this movie, they've done a super freaking amazing job making the monsters, ghosts, whatever you want to call them from the original book, into living, breathing, terrifying creatures. And I think the story is going to make sense as far as like what the kids are going through to see these things. It's kind of like it's pretty cool that the gimmick is like they find this book and like they open it and the stories start writing themselves, and their kids who found the book are in the stories, or the kids in the town are in the stories, and that's really cool. I think that's a cool gimmick. I mean, it's probably been done before, but it's still pretty interesting to me.
After watching like kind of the first half of the trailer with them laying out the synopsis, I got kind of this feeling of, like, I kind of wish that the characters didn't really know each other, or that the girl didn't really know any of these other people, and it almost was this, like, super integrated, anthology movie, mm-hmm. where she's reading from this book, and then it just kind of cuts to this person getting killed by it, and slow realization of it, and not, and less so like, oh no, Billy's getting killed because I know who Billy is.
I think there are some characters less anthology that she doesn't know that are getting taken out. Like, at least doesn't know, like, on a friend level, like some people in the town and like people, various people that like are not her friends that are in the school or something, but. I don't know. I'm just kind of excited for it because it's going to be cool looking. And it's probably going to scare the living tees off us.
Yes. So. It looks like they did a really good job in the creature department and the practical effects.
Yeah. Well, that's all we have for this week. There's more to talk about. We really want to kind of do a versus on creature features versus monster movies. But I think we'll probably like pick a bunch of trailers we've seen or movies we've seen lately and kind of have a long discussion about that. But that's all we have for today. Like, comment, subscribe, let us know what you like and you don't like. Let us know if you're excited for anything or how you felt about any of the movies we reviewed. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.